Hi, everybody. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford. He's Wes Hodkiewicz. We're coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And Wes will start off this show with a discussion of some comments Aaron Rodgers made at his locker on Wednesday in his weekly media session, kind of following up in a sense on some things he said after the game last Thursday night with regards to Davante Adams having a hot game and really communicating with Rodgers on the sidelines in terms of what routes he thought could work and how the defense was playing him. And unlike maybe some other quarterbacks who don't like to have receivers in their ear, so to speak, with things like that, Aaron Rodgers sounds like he very much welcomes that, welcomes the feedback from his teammates on the sidelines as far as maybe what can work and, how the offense can get into a groove. I found that kind of interesting.
Yeah, I did too, Mike. And as I said before, I thought that this kind of reminded me a little bit of 2014 when Andrew Corliss, who wasn't exactly like the JerMichael Finley type tight end of this offense, he wasn't like usually a go-to option, but he was talking to Rodgers at the end of that game against Miami, and it's the most important critical possession, 4 seconds to go, and he's calling for the football because he liked his matchup with his linebacker. Those are all things that Rodgers welcomes. He wants to hear that kind of input if there's a certain situation that other players on that offense feel that they can take advantage of. Certainly when you go back and watch that film against the Chicago Bears, that was working. Those stop routes and in those type of formations had been working for the Packers up until that point.
Sure.
And the Bears hadn't done a whole lot to really adjust to it. So Davante Adams was sitting there saying, feed me more, and Rodgers definitely obliged that, and it was one of the reasons the Packers were able to come out on top.
Yeah, and make no mistake, this isn't the same kind of thing as the Keyshawn Johnson or Terrell Owens,
right,
you know, get me the gall darn ball, you know, type of attitude on the sideline. This is like, hey, this feels like it's working. You know, maybe here's a little tweak off of it, or here's something we can do to try to keep rolling. And Rodgers, even at his locker Wednesday, extrapolated on it in a sense to say, hey, if the linemen are telling me these are the protection calls that we really like, if the running backs are saying, you know, these are the runs that seem to be working, you know, when he's running that no huddle offense and calling some of the plays himself in those instances, he likes to have that feedback and be able to process that on the fly. And we'll see if that sort of communication continues, if the offense can kind of stay in that groove that it found against the Chicago Bears.
Yeah, and kind of leapfrogging off your point a little bit too, at the same time that Rodgers was speaking to the media, Jordy Nelson was on the opposite side of the locker room doing his own session. And we're talking about a receiver that had one catch for 9 yards in that game, and you know, wasn't one of the focal points of it. But I think one of the things that's very telling for the receiving group is when he was asked about that, he's like, hey, Davante was hot that day. He was the hot hand. Randall Cobb said a very similar thing at his locker, too. You try to find the guys who can make big plays. So sometimes your opportunities are only going to be 2. Sometimes they're going to be 13. But it's about what you do with those opportunities that really determine what kind of game you're having, not so much how many times you're being looked to. Because at any given time, especially with the multiplicity of this offense, it could go to anybody.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the last thing Jordy Nelson is going to do when 3 of his teammates have double-digit catches apiece and Rodgers has 39 completions, the last thing he's going to do after a victory is complain about, you know, how come I didn't get the ball. That's not Jordy. We know that.
Yeah.
But that's not any of the guys in this receiving core. And I think Aaron Rodgers appreciates that. They appreciate that amongst themselves. But as I said, the quarterback certainly appreciates it when he doesn't feel like there's one guy who's feeling left out or something like that. That they know that it's about what gets him in rhythm. It's about finding the open guy. And the way they've been talking about this offense, I'm sensing a quiet confidence that the offense maybe is going to find itself, even with the struggles with not having Eddie Lacy, James Starks, and all of that they're dealing with in the backfield.
Definitely, and it probably bodes well, too, for them that you're looking at an offense that already has had a 100-yard game out of Jordy Nelson, Randall Cobb, and now Davante Adams with that performance. So they've found ways to get all those guys involved on a week-to-week basis. And at certain points, I mean, it's difficult to project in terms of who that guy's going to be, depending on the matchup. But they're there. And that's exactly what this offense needs. When you don't have your top 2 running backs, when you're missing Jared Cook, who is kind of seen as the unsung hero that was going to come in and really add another dimension to this offense, you have to go to what your strengths are. And their strength going into the season was their receivers, and Rodgers took full advantage of that against the Bears. And now going up against Atlanta, 31st ranked pass defense, I think, in the league, that's something that they're going to be keeping an eye on.
Yeah, for sure. And what I think what this offense is hanging its hat on right now, if you pick one thing, it's that efficiency on third down. They are number one in the league. They've overtaken the Dallas Cowboys in terms of third down conversion percentage. And when you can convert on third downs and move the chains, you win time of possession, you control that part of the game, and that's something that Mike McCarthy wants to see on a consistent basis.
And how many times did I hear you say during that game against the Bears, that's a fine play when we're talking about 4 or 5 yard passes on the
first
down?
That works.
That's just as good as a 4 or 5 yard run on first down. So
absolutely,
if that's what you have to do to move the ball, keep you in those favorable down and distance situations, that's what you have to do, and the Packers executed it perfectly.
Yeah, for sure. All right, well, with that, we'll throw it to a break, and we'll be back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkiewicz. And Wes, continuing with kind of the theme of communication on offense, we found out about some late night study sessions, I guess you call it, between quarterback Aaron Rodgers and some of his newer running backs, Ty Montgomery, who's kind of making that transition to that hybrid role, receiver and running back, and then also with Don Jackson coming up from the practice squad to the active roster. These guys certainly taking their duties, new duties, and the task at hand pretty seriously.
Yeah, Mike, and it kind of reminds me of my first month with the Packers, where you'd take me aside and show me how to write, post things to our website, best way to format stuff. You know, those are the small things that go a long way. Teach a man to fish, right?
Right.
But the thing was that's interesting about this is, and I was talking to Don Jackson about this a little bit, it sounded almost somewhat impromptu in a way. I think Aaron Rodgers and Ty Montgomery were setting aside some time to talk, and it sounded more like Jackson was just sort of in the vicinity, and Rodgers was like, hey, come here, check this out. I want to teach you a few things.
Yeah.
And it is one thing to know the playbook, and it's one thing to know the offense, but being in the backfield with Rodgers, with all of his checks, his nonverbal cues, there's so many things that he does at the line of scrimmage that a running back needs to be in tune with. So that was one of the big reasons why Jackson got involved with it. Rodgers even said that, you know, they're planning to probably do it again this week, and maybe even will bring in Nile Davis into it as well.
Yeah.
So that's really the biggest thing. When you go 4 or 5 months with a set backfield, I mean, you got to remember, Don Jackson wasn't even here for training camp. He was here for the offseason program, but wasn't here for training camp. So when you're that set for so long in the backfield and there's such an abrupt change, there is an adjustment to be made, and those are the hours and time that the running backs and Aaron Rodgers are willing to put in to make it work.
Yeah, and it was interesting, in a session at Ty Montgomery's locker on Wednesday, I asked him about suddenly being, you know, thrown all this responsibility on offense when he had, you know, only played sparingly, just a few snaps here and there up until this change was made. And for Montgomery, his initial reaction, it's not about carrying the ball or catching passes out of the backfield. When you're in the backfield, it's about protecting number 12.
Right.
It's about, you have to know, you have to be there to be the guy to pick up the blitzing linebacker if they're coming after the quarterback, because otherwise that guy's got a free run to hit Rodgers. And that's a responsibility that every running back in this offense knows is job one, aside from maybe ball security. Obviously, you don't want to be fumbling the football when you do get it. But those job responsibilities rank right up there, and certainly no lack of preparation going into these games for these guys.
Yeah, definitely. And Randall Cobb sort of spoke on that too. And, you know, that Sam Seal quote that sort of followed Ty Montgomery for the last 2.5 years about how he's a bigger version of Cobb. Cobb's like, well, this is the perfect way in which to use him, in terms of sometimes between the tackles, sometimes standing up to the pass protection. Those are all the ways in which, yeah, he's a great route runner and there's things he can do as a receiver, but he's also stout enough and at 216 pounds can stand up to some of those, that pressure and some of that contact. So that's why I think the Packers feel really comfortable with him in this role. He's a wide receiver. He's wearing number 88. But there's just so many different ways to use him. Davante Adams probably called it better than anybody. He probably shouldn't even have a position. I mean, there's really no one way to quantify him. It's very difficult to describe him. And the fact that now he is getting these opportunities, back-to-back catches, over 10 catches in a game, first time since 1993 a receiver has done that, it's pretty remarkable what he's done, considering it was only 17 snaps in the first four games that Montgomery was on the field with the offense.
Yeah, and I didn't realize that till I saw that in one of your stories, that 10 receptions in back-to-back games for the first time since 93. That's a while ago.
Sterling Sharp did it. Yeah, so, I mean, yeah, it does. It goes back quite a ways, but probably speaks to the contribution that they've gotten out of Montgomery these last few weeks.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting, I think, from a chess match standpoint, if you will. If opposing defenses don't like, you know, Montgomery slipping out of the backfield to catch a pass and whatnot, the way you keep him back there is to rush.
Right.
You know, I mean, if you're that guy, if you're that linebacker, if you rush the quarterback, then Montgomery has to stay put. So now that all this is on film with what the Packers are doing, you know, with Montgomery and where they line him up and whatnot, it'll be interesting to see all the counteractions and the counters to the counters as the season goes along, because I don't think the Packers are going to consider this role with Montgomery temporary. I think they want to get the other running backs up to speed and have more options. But when that happens, I don't think this hybrid role with Montgomery goes away.
No, absolutely. And that is one of the beautiful things about it. One of the things that probably kind of confused me a little bit about what the Bears did in that game was that you did have an opportunity to maybe adjust there to send some extra guys, force the Packers to keep Montgomery back there. They didn't do that. So he was able to leak out and did a lot of work underneath.
Yep.
And he could run those routes well. I thought that was one of the things that stood out to me when I watched the game back, is just how crisp he is, and he's right where he needs to be when Rodgers needs him to be there. But now you do have Nile Davis a week into the process. You do have Don Jackson, who appears to have put that hand injury behind him. So there are other options there too. So if you can kind of sort of put together a backfield, even if it doesn't look as powerful as Eddie Lacy and James Starks, you can find ways to be successful and to take pressure off that passing game.
Yeah, for sure. And we'll see kind of how this evolves now with the game against Atlanta and then going forward, because the Packers don't have any more breaks here.
Right.
It's 10 straight weeks with a game on either Sunday or Monday. So with that, we'll throw it to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford here with Wes Hodkiewicz. And Wes, on Wednesday, we also got a conference call with the opposing quarterback and head coach, Matt Ryan from the Falcons, and then also Dan Quinn. Quinn had an interesting portion to his conference call, because he was asked about the Falcons trying to bounce back from these consecutive close losses down to the wire. They lost by 2 points against Seattle. They thought they should have had a pass interference call on Richard Sherman that maybe would have set up a game-winning field goal. Then they blow the 10-point lead at home to the Chargers, fail on a 4th-and-1 in overtime, and then lose by a field goal in OT. And that's coming off of a 4-game winning streak.
Right.
So Quinn was asked about sort of the resilience of his team. And it was interesting because he mentioned that during the offseason, he had his team spend a week, had some what he called special forces soldiers come in and spend a week in the off-season program with his players to really talk about and try to instill some of that mental toughness and resiliency. And I think this is in response to the Falcons going on a 6-game losing streak last year after a 6-1 start. They lost a stretch of 4 out of 5 games by 4 points or less. And then the 6th game of the losing streak was a 38-0 whitewash where they kind of hit rock bottom. And Dan Quinn really spent the offseason focusing on that mental side of his team. And it's going to be tested now with the Packers happening to be the opponent after these back-to-back tough losses.
Yeah, it's just kind of coincidental that it's sort of unfolded the way it has. Now they didn't get off to a 6-0 start. But, I mean, still, being able to have the dominant performances they did early on, being able to beat the Super Bowl representatives right off the bat.
Yeah, back-to-back weeks.
Back-to-back weeks. Yeah. And then suddenly they find themselves behind the eight ball again, especially in that division. I mean, with all due respect right now, but the way it's shaping up, 9 wins might be enough.
So yeah, it could be.
If you can get to that mark, you're probably in pretty good shape. So it does come back to resiliency. It does come back to the midseason grind and being able to power through it. The Packers didn't, you know, they do different type of things too. I know Mike McCarthy's been pretty notorious for the motivational techniques he's used in the offseason to get the guys in that mental state. But that's the key, is that when you have a 17-week season, being able to stretch that through and being able to rise to the occasion each and every Sunday. So I respect Quinn for doing it. I really find him to be a very engaging guy.
Yeah.
I think he's a brilliant mind, as a defensive kind of coordinator and mindset. But now the question is that you go into a contest like this, they still have a pretty tough sled coming up here with Green Bay and then everything that follows after it. So can you find that stop? Can you try to find yourself and your rhythm to reestablish your footing after such a solid start?
Yeah, and he's facing the questions because of what happened last year in his first year as a head coach when they started out so hot and then things kind of fell apart. And he's insisting, you know, you see the headlines coming out of Atlanta, we're a different team this year, this is a different team, you know, and sometimes a lot of the same types of things we hear from Mike McCarthy, in that last year has nothing to do with this year. That's the mentality that these coaches take, and I'm curious to see, you know, how Atlanta responds. Obviously, they're playing at home. That becomes a little bit easier response when you're in a tough spot like this. But by the same token, the Packers have had a little bit extra rest coming off of a Thursday night game, and there's certainly no lack of awareness as to how important this game is, with the Packers 4-2, with the Falcons 4-3, and all of the teams in the NFC that are above 500 right now. This is a pretty, for a mid-season game, this is a pretty big one.
Yeah, definitely. And this is one of those things, too. As you said, you can't go back and look at last season as something, as a connection to this season, because at the end of the day, it has no bearing.
Yeah.
The offensive stats, the defensive stats, the wins, the losses, the titles, none of it impacts 2016. So I'm totally with Mike McCarthy and Dan Quinn in that thinking. I know sometimes it isn't the most popular logic when we deal with some of our insider inbox readers,
right,
but it's very much true.
Yeah.
This is the only thing you can control at this point. And for Atlanta, they've been through that grind. They've seen what's happened when they've fallen behind the eight ball, and they don't want it to happen again. Now you look at Green Bay, somewhat the same thing can be said. It was at this point last year that they were 6-0, and then they had to try finding themselves again and being able to make that playoff push. So they understand the sense of urgency along with this too. And again, it just goes back to the way you prepare throughout an offseason and how you kind of condition yourself for this grind, because you're not always going to have your same players. You're not always going to be able to keep up that momentum every week. But if you maintain that consistency throughout, that's ultimately what determines who's going to win divisions and who's going to get into the playoffs.
Yeah, for sure. I agree with that. But before we throw it to a break, Wes, let's take care of some sponsor business here. Picture this. You and a friend are sitting VIP in plush leather recliners watching the Packers on the 50-yard line at Lambeau Field. Nice picture, isn't it? Well, if you enter Cousin Sub's Best Seats in the House promotion, you and a guest could win a chance to kick back on the 50-yard line in style. Two pairs of lucky Packers fans will be chosen prior to each home game for this VIP experience. Enter daily now through December 12 by completing the entry form and submitting. For complete rules and eligibility, go to packers.com/best seats. Cousin Subs, we believe in better. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkowitz. And Wes, before we go today, I wanted to touch on a topic that we didn't quite have time to hit on earlier in the week. Last Sunday night's game, Seattle against Arizona, we talked about a little bit, but the fact that it ended in a tie. I got some interesting emails in our insider inbox with regards to people's feelings about games in the NFL in this day and age,
yeah,
ending in a tie. It was the first tie in a couple of years in the NFL. The Packers haven't had one since 2013, the
right
one with Minnesota. But it's interesting because some of the international fans are like, hey, what's wrong with a tie? You know, they deal with ties in soccer and whatnot, their most popular sport, all the time. And the overwhelming sentiment on the American side is, you got to have a winner and a loser. This is not about walking off the field with a tie score. So, just curious as to your thoughts. Do you like the fact that in the NFL you can still have a tie if the 15-minute overtime ends that way?
There's two reasons why I do. One, this definitely shows the difference in terms of the cultures. UK, they're cool with it. You know,
yeah,
Europe, you have ties all the time with soccer. The NFL, there's two reasons why I'm fine with it. One, player safety. In this day and age, you don't want these guys overexerting themselves. They've already played 60 minutes. 75 is a lot.
Yeah.
And the second reason is this. It does have a bearing. It still matters. The Green Bay Packers made the playoffs in 2013 because they tied against the Minnesota Vikings.
And did not lose that game.
And they didn't lose that game. Right. That was the difference. That's Absolutely. What kept them in it. I understand there's a lack of closure sometimes. I understand that it sometimes can be really hard for people to digest. But I just feel like with the NFL, it's necessary at this point in time. Maybe it hasn't always been that way, but I get why it's like that now. And I also understand people's frustrations because there is only 16 games. You want to have a winner and a loser when you go out there to watch them. But at the end of the day, I think you also have to be cognizant of what these players are putting forth on the field.
Yeah, for sure. And when you're talking about having to come back sometimes 4 or 5, but either 6 or 7 days later and play another game, you can't just let these games go on interminably. I mean, the rigor that the players go through, as you say, has to be taken into account. And the new overtime rules certainly lend themselves to more ties.
That's it.
Because that's what happened in the 2013 game with the Packers and the Vikings. Both teams traded field goals on the opening possession of overtime, if I recall correctly.
Yep.
And then nobody scored the rest of the period. And then the same thing happened this past Sunday night in Arizona, where they traded field goals on that first possession because that opening field goal no longer ends the game. I personally like the adjustment that the NFL made to the overtime rules. But I also like the fact that the NFL hasn't completely shifted to the college system of put the ball in the 25-yard line and then, you know, it just becomes possession after possession.
Yeah.
Who can match who? I'm not a big fan of that myself.
And kickers are too good in the NFL. I mean, the games will go on forever. I do like that side of it, is that everybody gets a chance to score here. A coin flip is not going to determine a winner and a loser. It was the right mentality to go forward, and the trade-off for that is more ties. And we've seen that a little bit already, and I'm guessing we'll probably see it again going forward. But you just got to take it for what it's worth.
Yeah, yeah. Packer fans still don't like the idea of the touchdown ending it on the first possession because that's not Green Bay out of the playoffs a couple years in a row, but I'm sure we'll talk about that more in the future. For now, that's a wrap on Packers Unscripted. On Twitter, he's at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford, at Packers for the Team account. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next time.